Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Bill Reeder is the president of Campus Cooks, the industry leader in providing professional staffing and food service management to fraternities and sororities with operations on 45 campuses in 25 states. He oversees an executive team charged with growing and managing operations on campuses nationwide while ensuring client satisfaction. So, Bill, thank you so much for joining me today on the Sourcing Hero podcast.
Thank you, Kelly, for inviting me. I'm excited to talk to you this morning.
And I'm going to go way out on a limb and say that most of the people in our listening audience have never occupied a role anything at all like yours. So can you get us started today just by telling us a little bit about your current role, about how you spend a typical day?
Sure. My current role is obviously different from where it began 15 plus years ago. Still the president and owner of Campus Cooks, but today my role is providing the direction and vision for the company and ensure we have the necessary resources to accomplish our goals and our vision as we set forth. And that includes removing any barriers within the company to ensure our team members can meet and exceed their goals.
Now, how did you end up founding Campus Cooks and working in this space?
Well, it's a funny story. I am a fraternity member of Phi Kappa Psi. Part of my 4 years there at Northwestern, we went through three cooks over 4 years. We dealt with theft issues. We dealt with absenteeism and budget overruns. Mm. I had also worked for a catering company during those 4 years. So as you progress within the fraternity, started doing dishes and cleaning grease traps to running the kitchen operations with a couple of the brothers. At that point, one of our cooks, needed to go to VA hospital for a pre-existing condition. And went ahead and contacted the caterer that I'd worked for over the summers and discussed with him some of our pain points and needs. He looked at what we were spending, looked at what we were getting for our money, and said, you know, I could do this, upgrade the quality of the food, the variety of the food, and go ahead and cater it in. At that point in time, he just catered my chapter, Phi Psi, and the chapter next door the year later. Over the next 7 plus years, he started putting on-site cooks, on-site chefs within these fraternity sororities, mainly at Northwestern. And if you're involved with food and food service, you know that green beans you cook off at 3 o'clock are very difficult to keep fresh once you cater it and deliver it at 5:30. I had a passion in life, which was to trade commodities and stocks, and pursued that and got together with Carl back in 2003. I was the last one in, first guy out scenario with my trading group. Was let go and started looking around about what I would like to do, whether it was purchasing dog grooming, car washes, et cetera, et cetera. Carl and I got together, and he truly was the brains, the operational brains behind Campus Cooks. Bought in 2004, rebranded it. I took the direction as sales, marketing, finance, and Carl took control of really the operational aspect, and that included all the purchasing of the food and the menu development.
Well, it's interesting. And as I commented, you do something very different than anybody else that we've ever interviewed. So it struck me that this might be my only opportunity to talk about a company's value proposition by sharing their Google reviews. There's not that many people and companies that I talk to who bring with them Google reviews. So now I know we are talking about fraternities and sororities, but don't worry for anybody listening in. We know this is a family podcast, so I've carefully chosen a couple of Google reviews here. So let me read this off, and then Bill, let's talk about how as a business owner this type of feedback makes you feel. So the first review is about Chef Dave, And we read that Chef Dave is great. He goes out of his way to make sure that we all enjoy the meals he prepares. There's always a great variety in what we are offered each week. Healthy choices to comfort foods, we have them all. And then the second review is about Chef Jason. He gives everything he has to every meal he puts on the table. Not only does he care about smart budgeting and making great food, he builds relationships with all the brothers and cares about the house and the brotherhood's well-being as a whole. So I'll give you the really fast sort of procurement read. Smart budgeting and great food, that's like A++++. That's, you know, if you can do budgeting and good food, you're doing great. But from your perspective, Bill, how does it feel to read these types of reviews about your team?
Well, first of all, thanks for reading the good reviews, because every company, of course, has negative reviews. But
yeah, we skipped the one about the green beans.
Good, good. I mean, you're obviously really proud, because what goes into it is we also have positive reviews if you look on Indeed and other employees sourcing, and those are almost as important as our client reviews. I mean, what it says is that we're nailing our purpose. You know, we want to positively impact collegiate life through food, service, and relationships. And if we're able to do that by providing a product, providing an experience that the students is a value contributing to their 1, 2, 3, 4 years in the fraternity sorority house, we're nailing it. And if we're at all, and if we're also providing a vast amount of resources for our chefs, which mean procurement on what products they can buy, the dollars they have to spend in order to fill the client needs, you know, we're hitting out of the ballpark. And the worst thing we can do is overpromise and underdeliver. You know, so we want to underpromise and overdeliver. And on both sides is the expectations of our students that we serve, and along with the chefs that we hire, who are very creative executive chefs who need the latitude to create things and not feel that budgets and keeping in budget is the number one goal.
Absolutely. And yet, as much as your chefs are cooking for everyone, right, that lives and passes through these fraternities and sororities, you have key points of contact within those communities that you sort of consider your most direct customers. When you talk about expectations, how do you and your team initially gather that customer input about specific menus and food preferences?
Wow, that's a big, big question. We have small micro things in terms of apps, menu meetings, quarterly surveys, something as simple as a crave sheet, which you use pen and paper, which students can mark. What we have to do with any environment, make sure we're hearing from, you know, 80% of the students and not just the, you know, the 20%, you know, 20% of the most outspoken. And the biggest thing you can do is provide these tools, and communication is a two-way street. So, for example, we'll do a menu meeting where we're going to ask for various reps from all the classes, or we're going to make sure we conduct a menu meeting at the regular time within the dining room so other members of the fraternity sorority can come. We will also ensure if there's a crave sheet and someone fills it in, that on the menu for the following week is you can see by request. And thus, we're hoping that we're training our students that we can prepare, we can create any sort of type meal. We just have to know. And with anything, whether you're managing employees or client relations and client services, if you don't know, you can't fix it. And that's one of the struggles we have. I have teenagers in the house, and a lot of answers I get are, yeah, okay. So you have to really learn to ask questions about what you want to see, what's your goals, you know, something as big as what's your goals for the next week? Do you have any big events, philanthropies, and try and draw it out of them, things that'll kind of match what they're looking for, what they want.
Okay. Now, what I hear, again, listening with my procurement ears, is all this flexibility, all of this responsiveness to both events as well as local customer preference. That's starting to sound expensive because it sounds like a lot of variability. So how do you balance all of these different preferences and shifting event types and endpoint with obviously the house's preference as a whole to keep their costs either low or predictable, depending on what kind of a budget they're working with?
Sure. First and foremost, you know, how we line up our budget, it isn't necessarily tied to a daily cost per plate. You know, when we sell and work with one of our clients, we're coming to an agreement on the food budget for the year. If you look at a cost plus type model.
Okay.
When we go to our fraternity sorority members, we're basically putting our chefs in charge of a semester budget. Now, if you're familiar with the academic year, they tend to repeat itself. Mm-hmm. Meaning you're going to have a recruitment, you're going to have a mom's day, a homecoming event, a parents' weekend, and various events through the semester. So we're just bringing up these events as we onboard them in the beginning of the year and saying, okay, these are the things that you guys do. Now, what are these other events that potentially could affect your budget? And as we work week to week and things pop up, because believe it or not, you're not getting 4 weeks' notice on some of these events, you have a week to go. We can alter the menu with them and say, okay, you want a steak dinner for this particular night. That means we're going to adjust some of these other meals and make them more cost effective. For example, you're going to have pasta instead of once a week, maybe three times, but yet you're going to have this meal that you guys want to earmark for a special event for your fraternity or sorority house. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that absolutely does make sense. And it actually sounds, you know, as you start to think about these houses functioning as a business, I can hear that there are probably a lot of ways in which your team creates continuity, right? Because you do have a rotation through the house. That's sort of the way these things are supposed to work. You're there for a certain amount of time. You rise potentially into a position of leadership, and then you graduate and you go on with your life. And so having a sense of, well, every year you tend to do these events, or, oh, you know, if they're looking to do something different, you're even potentially in a position to say, well, 2 or 3 years ago, you did this and it went over pretty well, but for whatever reason, we didn't do it again, right? Maybe you want to consider it. There's sort of a knowledge retention piece that it sounds like it comes from these conversations. And yet, as fun as talking about food always is, I imagine there have to be some tough conversations that have to be had from time to time, right? Let's talk about your steak and pasta. Maybe not everybody is invited to the steak dinner. And are there maybe then conversations about how much are we going to spend on the steak dinner versus how many times is the rest of the house going to have to eat pasta this month to make that steak dinner for a subset of people work? How do you approach, and not even necessarily negative conversations, but how do you approach conversations with points of contact and stakeholders when you need them to help you think something through because there are trade-off choices to be made?
Well, that's an excellent question. One of the things as you, in a leadership role, you know, as we manage employees, team members, and as we manage clients, is there's a lot of anxiety around a tough conversation. You know, once you have a conversation, there's a breath of fresh air. You're like, oh, this is no big deal after all.
Yeah.
And you really have to come with a mindset of, okay, yes, we can do all this, and this will be the effects. And thus, when you go through that process, when you sit for someone, meaning, hey, we've always done it this way. We've always rang the bell at 5:30. We can fit 200 people. Here's what we've produced. And there is some institutional knowledge about how they've done it and how they view the success of the event, you know, may have gone. We have to sit down and say, here's some ideas we have. Here's some things that could potentially work better for you. Yes, we can do it this way, but why don't we think about altering it? And when you get into those conversations, you have to be very careful of not using, you know, hey, we're going to change everything up because that's scary. But you have to rely upon, you know, a bit of a give and take, because obviously we're dealing with students, we're dealing with alumni, as well as facility directors. They all have various points of view of what a successful event is. And so bring everyone to the table and say, okay, what is your definition of success? What do you want to see success? And then it does become a tough conversation, especially for our chefs, is sometimes they have to mediate these multiple parties.
Yes.
And that can be, you know, obviously extremely difficult. And you know, even the fair amount of training that we do, you do face those challenges, you know, even as direct to finish up, where you have student leaders who control the menu. And I mean control, where maybe the rest of the house doesn't want it that way, or maybe they want different items. And okay. you have to, you know, you have to massage it, because the student leaders are the one who are, you know, A, signing your quote unquote contract, but yet the general populations are the one who's going to vote on whether you're back. And so you're kind of at times you do get between a rock and a hard place, as they say.
No, absolutely. And one of the other things that I appreciated, as much as I'll be totally honest, I did it because I thought it would be fun. I went out and found those Google reviews and read them. I think one of the things that's really important about your business model that a lot of people in corporate situations can learn from is that, for instance, when Chef Dave and Chef Jason show up to do their work, they are campus cooks, right? There's not this sense that, oh, well, he's great, but the food's awful, or, you know, we love the food, but this guy's cranky and we don't like having him in our house. There's this sort of total connection that people make between the person, the food, and the company, especially when it comes to that decision of, do they have you back? How do you prepare your chefs? And then if there's any other people that end up in this position, to sort of have the right mindset to bring the right type of tone and philosophy, understanding that they are representing campus cooks in spirit as well as in the deeds and actions that they take on as part of their job.
Yeah, there is a direct correlation between our employer retention and our client retention, meaning, you know, we retain 70% of our chefs year over year, and we have a 5% regrettable client turnover rate, which means we hold on to 95% of our clients. And thus, there is an identity and a tie and a bond between the chef and the chapter mm-hmm. house. And what we have to do is allow the freedom for the chef to create, to get used to the culture of that house, but we have to give them all the tools and support. One of the things that we do that I want to highlight is through the hiring process, we're hiring true to our values, our ideology. And two of these things we talk about include a passion about food and service, and the other one is enhancing the Greek experience. Now, passion for food and service, if you're in the hospitality industry and our employees, you know, they kind of come with it. You know, you can ask them questions, what they've done, but they're really passionate about food, and service goes hand in hand. When you deal with the Greek experience, how do we get them prepared? And one of the things we do, we have a college of campus cooks. And within this college, we're going over not only the blocking and tackling and the menu design, training on the process and procedures and the sanitation, but we also review Greek and Greek 101. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do is give them an understanding of what Greek life is, and specifically about the chapter they're walking into. You know, there's going to be a difference between a fraternity and sorority. There's going to be a difference from region to region, parts of the country. Yep. And how do you get them prepared when they walk in, and fall is extremely difficult if you have kids or out there just seeing the academic year, things you're drinking from a fire hose.
Oh yeah.
And how do we get them ready to walk in those doors and understand, you know, hey, you're here to produce an experience, and the food can be A1, but if you're a curmudgeon, as you mentioned, or you just don't listen to the needs, because these are not kids, these are clients, you know what? They will revolt. They will ask for a new chef, and there's not much we can do with it. But on the flip side, you know, if we have a chef who is blaming the company for everything and not being able to succeed, then that goes back to your earlier question about difficult conversations and having difficult conversations with clients who may see or hear one thing, but be unaware of other things that are going on in the background. So hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah, no, I think it does. And I actually think it provides a great transition to sort of our last set of questions that I ask everybody that joins me on the podcast. You know, we talk about this idea of a sourcing hero. But really what we're talking about is the idea of heroism in a business context. So if I can get you just to share your opinion, this is one of those where there's no wrong answer. What is a hero to you in a business context?
A hero for me. Well, that's pretty easy looking at that. One of our values is always growing professionally and personally. And for me, it's providing opportunities to grow, again, whether it's professionally, personally, or within Campus Cooks. There's nothing like giving someone a job, giving someone an opportunity to excel and grow. And we have not only the individuals who start off at dishwashers, prep cooks, to private chefs. We've also had people who come for a couple years and want to learn different skills and experiment with their menu in order to open up a restaurant. So for me, you know, from a leadership aspect, I want to give you all the tools so that you can make the most of your time and your experience with Campus Cooks. And hopefully you are fulfilled as well working for these chapters when they give you birthday cards or when they write you notes and thank you for the year. You know, as you mentioned, Chef David. Those are the things that I like to do. When you look from a business hero, and that what it means to me is hiring someone who may not have all the skills, but is a cultural fit, and then working with them to see where their ceiling's at, and so they can attain really as much as they want.
And I don't think that's an easy thing to do. You know, within procurement, we certainly talk about the fact that, you know, there's very few people who are, you know, 8, 9 years old saying, when I grow up, I want to be in procurement, right? It's probably never happened. And so as a sort of a selling point of bringing people into the field, we'll often say this is a great stepping stone. Come and spend some time with us here. You're really going to get to understand how this company works, what makes it tick, connect conceptually the top line with the bottom, and understand how third-party relationships drive revenue and competitive differentiation and all that. And yet, as much as we will sometimes sell it as a stepping stone to anything you want to do in the C-suite, you do invest time in people. And when they want to go, it can be a little bit hard, maybe not to take it personally. Any advice for people that find themselves struggling with the need to bring people in, provide them with experience, expertise, knowledge, give them hands-on lessons learned, but truly not feel badly when they are ready to move on to the next thing?
Well, that was a deep, deep question. I'll try and unpack that.
and I'm assuming that if anybody opens a restaurant, you get to eat first meal there for free, right? So let's just assume
not on the
that.
First night. You don't want to be there opening night. It's a mess. It's a
no,
mess.
No, especially not soft open. Exactly.
No soft opening. You know, the biggest thing is when you hire individuals and when people come on board, you know, laying out their onboarding, laying out what is the expectations for their next 30, 60, 90 days, and then talking to someone about where they want to go. And when we get to procurement specifically, you know, in our finance department, when they're initially hired, they think it's all about 1 + 1 = 2, making sure they pay the bills on time, you know, calling a vendor and, you know, seeing how we could, you know, get a lesser rate, when actually procurement specifically has so much to do with the health and the culture of the company. Procurement needs to be able to understand what other departments are doing and why they're spending their money. Why maybe is it more efficient to spend a little bit more where they can save time, right? That can go back to the client experience. You know, how can we give tools, whether it's an ability to utilize a couple different vendors because they offer different products that we can use. And procurement really knows a lot what's going on because they're in charge of that back office. Anyone who's late to submit their expense reports to, you know, what's the best travel firm to use, right? And when you talk about people who feeling that they don't necessarily have the skills, you know, I would challenge them to make sure that they are learning on their own, but then also going to their coworkers, going to their direct supervisor and saying, hey, I want to be here in a year or two. How can you, as my direct supervisor, get me there? Right? Everyone has to be on the same page and everyone has to be pulling, as they say, you know, the rope. And in order to get you there, my success is predicated upon your success. And if you're working 1, 2, 3, 5 years, and then at some point you walk in and say, hey, I'm ready to move on, we will wish you the best of luck because you have done, you've given everything to Campus Cooks, thus to see you continue to grow or to see you follow a new passion, you know, that's our role. And that's what I would see as a role for anyone who's managing a number of people.
Absolutely. And it actually occurs to me, so I was going to wrap, but I feel like I can't wrap without asking you this one critical question. I know I would regret it if I didn't pause here and ask it. Okay, Bill, in all of your years and experience, either working at Campus Cooks or being in a house yourself, what is the best meal that you ever ate in a fraternity house? It's probably the hardest question I've asked. Fraternity house.
I love going to our fraternity houses and eating the ethnic food that our chefs are creating. Our chefs come from vast backgrounds and they're extremely diverse in what they can produce and where they're actually were trained. So those are the meals that I love. And when you go to various regions of the country, that lends itself as well to eating those specific meals that normally you wouldn't get here in Chicago that you can get gumbo and crocodile down in the bayou, or going to Texas and getting their smoked meats, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the highlights, being able to try the various foods that our chefs create.
That's awesome. And thank you for humoring me on that. I know I was going to... ask what's his favorite food after we wrap. So Bill, if people are interested in either connecting with you or learning more about Campus Cooks, where would you suggest that they go?
Oh, you can go to my LinkedIn page. You have Campus Cooks. You also have Bill Reeder, LinkedIn. Or you can go to our website. If you want more information, we have not only for employees to apply, but also a form. It may be under the sales, but not you can still fill it in and it'll get to me and or procurement if you want to fill that in. So our website, LinkedIn, those would be the two places to go.
Awesome. Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your story, your point of view, and giving us some input on this.
No, I thank you for your time. This has been such a thrill. I appreciate meeting with Sourcing Hero and especially talking about, you know, what we can do as leaders, you know, to be heroes within our departments and our companies.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well and always remember that you can be a hero too.